Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
And now, from the Helix in Dublin, this is Off the Ball Live, featuring John Giles, Mark Lawrenson, Ronnie Whelan, Keith Andrews, David O'Leary, and Michael Ballack. But first, ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome on stage Joe Malloy and Jer Gilroy.
Hello.
How you doing? Not a bad audience.
Not bad at all. Hello, everyone.
I'm particularly grateful for people coming tonight because it's the nicest day of the year outside, and we understand that there are burgers to be flipped and, you know, outside suds to be blown off certain drinks. But luckily, we've got two Budweiser stands here on either side of the room to whet your appetite for the rest of the evening. And boy, do we have a show for you.
We sure do.
We've got Michael Ballack.
Yeah.
We've got John Giles.
Yeah.
We've got Ronnie Whelan.
Yeah.
We've got David O'Leary.
Yeah.
A lot of Arsenal fans here tonight. We also have Mark Lawrenson.
Yeah.
A huge amount of Liverpool fans have somehow snuck their way in here because, you know, they're celebrating qualifying for the Champions League. That's a trophy, right? And one Man United fan, apparently. That's brave, in fairness, you know?
It is. I was walking by the dressing room just before we came in. I'm happy to report, everyone, Michael Ballack is incredibly handsome.
This is going to be a theme tonight, right? There are certain pictures of him which we'll leave until after the watershed to show everybody. But we also have a very special guest tonight. Normally, Kevin Kilbane would be here, but he's swanning around Europe with Dave McIntyre. McIntyre, he reported in the last 20 minutes, is still wearing the same shirt today that he was wearing on telly last night, because it was a good expensive shirt, so why waste it? You know, you may as well get 24 hours out of it.
They are working together. I just want to add that bit in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's been a few romances where they've been driving around in minis. But anyway, so instead of that, we've got somebody far better than Kevin Kilbane tonight. We've got Keith Andrews. Yeah. Oh, yes, yeah.
Another incredibly handsome man.
How are you, lads?
Look at this hair.
Yeah. There's Keith in his early teenage.
This is what he was like. With that.
This is what he was like in the discos at.
No. Not so happy with that one.
First one's Sean Penn, and the second one's Kramer. Somewhere in between's all right, right?
Yeah.
So just to let everybody know, Keith is backstage doing all the interviews for us tonight. We're all over Facebook Live, facebook.com/offtheball. And in his debut interview at Ronnie Whelan, what just happened?
Kind of went well at the start, and then Ronnie was very nice, and then I don't know when I can Ronnie hear me, and then right at the end I call him Johnny. So it wasn't the best start, but he was very nice about it.
Yeah, he's professional.
I am playing his golf day tomorrow for him, so swings and roundabouts and
there
all
you
that.
Go, and we'll put details of the golf day up on Twitter and Facebook as well if anybody wants to help donate, because it's for a great cause, I know. So listen, obviously one of the things that we want to do tonight is have a good time. We're going to preview the FA Cup a little bit if anybody wants to get involved. By text, 53106 is the number, or you can tweet us at Off the Ball. But we also want to luxuriate in some absolutely classic moments, like this one from David O'Leary.
To assume the task, David O'Leary of Arsenal.
What's going to happen?
In his 52nd international appearance, David O'Leary is entrusted with the responsibility of taking the penalty that could send Ireland into the quarterfinals of the World Cup. This kick can decide it all. The nation holds its breath. Yes, we're there!
Yeah, not bad.
Not bad.
Ireland are through to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. And a meeting with Italy or Uruguay in Rome on Saturday night.
Yeah, not bad.
I presume you remember that? Do you remember watching that?
Oh, yeah, I remember that very well, yeah, vividly.
What age were you then?
22. 20, 29. Yeah, great days, weren't they?
Not
Do you
bad.
Remember?
No, I was outside doing I don't know what. I was too young to kind of grasp what was going on, yeah.
Yeah, great days. That's why I like. Genuinely, like, I'm buzzing to be here. Cause those lads are my heroes. You know, grow up watching them. And Ronnie gone to his golf day. I even went to Cork for one of his golf days. Who goes there?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I know, these are the lengths you go to, lads.
Ricky was right.
Look, I know Johnny Whelan was your favourite player growing up. I really liked him.
That's sticking, isn't it?
All right, it's time for us to get our first guest out. We're going to send Keith backstage, so get all over Facebook, get us on Twitter. He'll be back a little bit later to help us preview the FA Cup as well. But ladies and gentlemen, it's been a mainstay of Irish radio for a decade and a half. It's Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Have a seat.
How are you? Anywhere on the couch there.
So,
welcome.
Thank you.
The best part about some of these shows is that we get to spend a good bit of time on the internet looking at old photographs and looking at old matches and reading match reports and reading interviews with the people who are on the show. And today, Joe did a bit of digging around and found this absolutely remarkable video from Pathé News, from the dressing room after the 1963 FA Cup final. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen this before, but you might talk to us about some of the people you can see in
there,
it.
Can I?
Yeah. So I think that's Paddy Crerant in the immediate aftermath of the game. And you've just won the FA Cup final, and the atmosphere is pretty calm.
Or maybe it's before pre-game, the match or after the match?
It's pre-game, is it?
You'll see. No, pre-game. It's you're coming in, because there's the trophy being carried in by the number nine. Yeah. Who's the number nine there, John?
David Heard.
Right, so there, and there's the lads coming in, cheering.
Not much cheer, is there?
No, you're all very calm. There's the cup, obviously.
Oh, thank you.
And everybody's drinking milk.
Sorry?
Everybody's drinking milk. About 10 minutes in, somebody eventually produces...
Two folks.
A bottle of champagne.
Milk, yeah.
So why...
We're getting paid a few quid for that.
Is that what's going on there?
Yeah, that was a bit of sponsorship, yeah. You can imagine
Paddy
the players drinking milk. Yeah, that's Paddy Crerant, little folks, yeah.
We were looking for you. We didn't quite see you. There's a moment where you just walk by, but we don't really see you. You were 22 years old. This is 63.
Yeah.
There's someone getting milk
like
over the
Crerant, of course.
I was looking for a Bacardi and Coke after the match.
We've got a few for you there.
And there's Matt.
That's Matt. Paddy Crerant, yeah.
Amazing footage. Do you remember that as clearly as it's kind of there now? Do you remember that day?
Yeah. It was 1963. As you say, it was the time of the bad winter. It was the cup was delayed. I remember it well. It was the first time Manchester United won the cup since 1948. That was the time. And we'd had a bad season. We actually struggled against relegation up to about three or four matches from the end of the season. Although we were regarded as a star-studded team. You know, Bobby Charlton, Albert Quicksall, Dennis Law were all playing in that team. And we only got out of relegation trouble after about three or four matches. But on the day, the whole team gelled. Well, Dennis Law was always sensational, Bobby Charlton. On that particular day, we played Leicester and won 3-1. But Leicester had beaten us, I think, twice in the league that year. They finished fourth in the league and were big favourites, actually, to win the match, Leicester. And but we sort of turned on the style that day.
It's obviously an unbelievably important moment for Manchester United, because it's like the rebuilding of the team and a trophy just to make sure that everybody's like, okay, we're going the right direction here.
Yeah, but that was a big turning point for the club. I mean, this was 5 years after Munich, and it wasn't really a good 5 years for the club. As I said, that particular year, struggled against relegation, won the cup, got rid of me, and then they went on from there. that was a turning point. And I see you slipped in a photograph of me playing for Leeds, and you took it down quickly enough.
There's loads more to come, don't worry, we'll get there as well.
I was surprised at how poor looking the dressing rooms at Wembley were there.
When they were one of the best. I mean, it shows you how times have changed. You know, as you can see, all the grounds have improved. Wembley was the own Wembley, but Wembley was the traditional ground in those days for cup finals.
Sure.
In those days, it was only cup finals that were played there, you know, not semi-finals and all the playoffs and all the various things that we see today. Mm. So it was a real privilege in those days. And the FA Cup, I know it's coming up this weekend, the FA Cup in those days was the most glamorous cup. Sure. You know, winning the league was good. In those days, it qualified. In my early days, before there was European football, the cup was the major competition, the glamour.
The league was a slog and anybody could win it over the course of a season, but to turn it on at Wembley in front of everybody, and the game was televised as well.
Sorry, Jeremy.
The game would have been televised as well. That was why.
That was the only. It used to televise in the cup, but there was very little other television. I don't think even Match of the Day had come into it at that particular stage. So there was very little football on television. But the FA Cup was the glamour cup.
But the league was still the most important thing, clearly.
Well, it was at that stage. Manchester United went into the Champions League, what's now the Champions League, for the first English team to go into it in 1956-57. Chelsea had won the league in 54, and the Football Association in England discouraged them from going. They didn't go into it, Chelsea. Mm. So Matt Busby went against the wishes of the Football Association to go into the European Cup. That was in 1956-57 time. But before that, there was no incentive to win the league. You know, if teams had finished fourth, were happy. Yeah. The big thing was the cup. Even in my state, I could tell you the cup winners, say, from 1946 into the 70s. I couldn't tell you who won the league.
Right.
Because the cup was the day until, well, loads of things over the years have downgraded the cup, really. Although we have it on Saturday.
We saw Sir Matt there in his suit as you players were drinking milk and celebrating. What was he like pre-game? Was he rah-rah-rah?
No, not at all. No, he was very relaxed. Matt Busby was a great manager. I mean, Manchester United wouldn't be where they are today if it hadn't been for Matt Busby. Mm. No, Matt was very relaxed in what he did. In those days, the managers weren't on the touchline. Now we see Conte now and Klopp particularly. Matt Busby would have a fit looking at them jumping around. Now, Matt would sit in the stand. He wouldn't even be in the dugout. Right. He'd sit in the stand.
Would he come down at halftime? Was there a halftime team talk from him?
Well, he'd come in obviously at halftime in the dressing room. Yeah. But he was a very laid back type of man. He was ruthless as well. He was a ruthless manager. But he did it in a kind hearted way.
Yeah.
You know, like when I asked for a transfer, for example. If manager wants to keep you, they'll try and talk you out of it. If they want you to go, they'll put your request before the directors.
Yeah.
So when I ask for a transfer, Matt said without any hesitation, I'll put your request before the directors. So it was only. But Manchester United wouldn't be where they are today if it hadn't been for Matt.
Did Matt ever? I'm crossing him later, playing for Leeds when you're at Old Trafford or Elland Road. Did he ever say to you, "Probably made a mistake letting you go, John"?
He said it publicly in 1969. Leeds won the league in 69, and that was after 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah, he did actually say that, yeah.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
Yeah. Was there part of you...
He was a very charming man, you know. He didn't fall out with many people. He would do it, but he would do it in a quiet way.
Yeah.
You know? But he didn't throw the money around, Matt.
You have a bit of a chip?
And the Scottish people here tonight. He was a good Scot. Before the maximum wage was abolished, Matt used to have a meeting with the players, you know, and he had a meeting with us fairly regularly, and he always used to say, "This maximum wage is ridiculous, lads. You should all be on 100 quid a week." And the maximum wage was abolished unexpectedly or prematurely, and Matt's first offer was 25 quid a week on a fiver appearance money. That's absolutely true, yeah.
Good at the economics as well. Did you have a bit of a chip on your shoulder because he was so quick to let you go that helped you, were you able to use that as an inspiration and motivation? Were you able to use the fact that Matt let you go so quickly as motivation and inspiration when you got to Leeds? Were you able to prove him wrong? Were you trying to prove him wrong?
When I was leaving Leeds?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was only 22. At the time, and I'd had a bad time from the start of the year before, where I was playing for Manchester United in the semi-final of the cup against the great Spurs team, Danny Blanchflower, Dave McKay, and Cliff Jones, all these guys, the older guys will remember them. And we got a hiding 3-1 there, and I was terrible. I had a terrible game. I was only 21, and I was trying to do too much. Bobby Charlton actually was on the left wing, but I had a terrible game, and I think Matt and the staff lost confidence in me after that particular match. And they signed Dennis Law in the summer, and I was pushed out to the right wing. And for that 62-63 season, I couldn't do right for doing wrong. If I went outside, I should have gone inside. I went outside. I had a really, really bad time with Matt. Really bad time. And like when it even came to the, we played the semi-final of the cup, which I played in. Aberquicksall didn't play. Nobby actually was in the team. And we won 1-0. And we played, say, on the Tuesday night in a league match. And Matt had a way of leaving you out of the team. He'd call you over and he'd say, how do you think you're playing, son? And most players, being modest, would say, well, I could do better. He'd say, I agree with you, I'm leaving you out tonight. So at this stage, I was up to there with Matt.
Right.
So we played on the cup winning team on the Saturday, and I think it was Monday or Tuesday, we were playing Notts Forest or somebody, and he called me over. And I knew what he was going to say. But before he asked me how I thought I played, I asked him how he thought I played. And he said, well, I thought you played reasonably well. And I said, well, if I played reasonably well and won the semi-final of the cup, I think I should be playing tonight. He said, well, it's between you and Aberquicksall. He was brushing me off, you know, and I wouldn't let it drop. I said, well, Aberquicksall didn't play, and I played. Now, this was cheek to Matt Busby.
Yeah.
You know, this was real cheek to Matt Busby. So it was one of the nails in my coffin at
But he picked you for the final. He picked you for the FA Cup final.
Well, he had to actually pick me for the final, I'll tell you, because Nobby was coming into the team, and Aberquicksall was in the team, and Nobby got a hamstring injury, and we'd had a match on the Monday at Notts Forest before the cup final, and he insisted on Nobby would play to prove his fitness, and Nobby broke down with the injury, so there was nobody else to pick, so I had to play on the I had to play on the Saturday. But I must say I was very relaxed. Like, a cup final is a very nervous day, but I was totally relaxed going into it because I thought, I can't be that bad.
Yeah.
No, I can't be bad every week. So I was quite relaxed going into the final. And we won. We played. The lads turned it on. We turned it on that day and ran. You know, we played really well.
How did Matt tend to interact with you guys on the training ground or around the club? Like, could you have a bit of fun with him? Could you mess with him? Could you almost slag him? Or was there a distance?
He wasn't there, Joe.
Really?
No, he wasn't. They were very seldom on the training ground, Matt Busby. You see, I think when Matt Busby took over Manchester United, it was going back a long time.
Yeah.
He was the first to bring all the young players,
the babes.
Into the club, the babes. And like in my time, I went in 1956 when they were established. It was the survival of the fittest. He had the best young players from England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales. And what he did really was very, very good. I think in football, you're better saying too little than too much. So he didn't ruin players. He wasn't tactical in any way.
Right.
But what he was good, he had a great approach to it in terms, if you were, say today you hear the managers, if you're winning 2-1, you tie up the game. Matt didn't do that. He allowed you to play. And I played in matches where, you know, you're 2-1 up, you get to 2-2, you might even lose it. But he came into the dressing room and said, that's the way to do it.
Okay.
You know, he didn't go mad. He said, he believed in it, and he gave the players freedom. Real freedom to play.
Mm.
So he was great in that respect. But you didn't see much, there was no tactics really from Matt.
Right.
You know, it was go out and play, do your best, express yourself and that. You know, he was, and that takes a lot of courage.
Mm.
And like he had that. Like for example, I went to Leeds United, but Dom was the opposite. Dom was, you know, everything planned down. He was a great manager. And Matt wouldn't have done at Leeds what Don did. Because Matt had the pick of Ireland, England, Scotland, and Wales of 15-year-olds. Matt didn't have that. He had Norman Hunter, Paul Madeley, and Paul Rini, who became great players.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of coaching going in, and they were good lads, wanted to do it. So I think, you know, Matt wouldn't have been able to do what Don did.
Would you have survived at Manchester United? Would you have been the same player if you'd stayed?
Sorry?
Would you have been the same player if you'd stayed at Manchester United?
Stayed at Manchester? Well, nobody knows. I don't know. When I was there at Manchester United, it was actually, I said, push me out onto the right wing. And I was never a winger. I was okay, but I was never a winger. I was a midfield player. And the problem I had really at Manchester United was that I went to see a match when I was a young Manchester United player, Manchester City playing Fulham. And the great Johnny Haynes, all the people, you need to be holding him. Johnny Haynes was playing in that particular match. And in those days, you played inside left, inside right, and you stuck to your positions. Johnny Haynes, I watched the match, and Johnny Haynes didn't stick to one position. He went wherever the ball was. And I thought it was brilliant.
Mm.
And I actually heard Jimmy Murphy saying it was the best midfield display he'd ever seen. And my idea was, I'm going to copy that. But I wasn't ready for it yet. I was only 20, 21. I wasn't ready for it when I tried it. But I always wanted to do it and finished up doing it when I got a bit older. So in my career, I was lucky in many ways that when I went to Leeds, I went as a right winger, and we had Bobby Collins. Bobby Collins was a great Scottish player, smaller than myself, Bobby was. He was a great player, and he was 10 years older than me. So I was 22 when I went to Leeds, and when Bobby Collins got injured, I took over, but I was 24, 25. I was ready for it at that position, because I was always a midfield. When I was a kid, I was a midfield player. I wasn't a right winger. So that was it. When I played for Manchester United, I tried to do it at 21. I wasn't able to do it. But when I got to 24, 25, having played with Bobby Collins and that, I was able to do it at that stage.
The clock will be against us here quickly. So we've mentioned 1963, that final. You join Leeds. You're in the 65 final, where you lose to Liverpool after extra time. There's the 1970 final, which goes to a replay. That's against Chelsea, and you lose the replay. 1972, Leeds beat Arsenal 1-0. And then 73, very famously, Sunderland, second division, beat Leeds. What are your strongest memories of those other four finals?
Well, certainly not Sunderland. Actually, they are my strongest memories, because it was big a disappointment. You know, you're talking about the Cup coming up on the weekend, and Chelsea were probably odds-on favourites. Well, they couldn't have been bigger favourites than Leeds in 73 against Sunderland, who were then in the second division.
Yeah.
And
the only FA Cup winning team without a single international in their 11.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, Joe. They played like internationals on the day. And they played well, obviously played well. And second division team, we were odds on. I can still remember watching the Sunderland players going up for the Cup. And I thought it was a bad dream. Well, it was a bad dream, but looking at them going up. The only great thing about the Leeds lads, we lost that day, obviously, and we got terrible stick in the papers, terrible. But they were great lads, and Dom was great. We stuck together, and what a lot of people wouldn't remember, and anti-Leeds lads, people wouldn't want to remember, we actually went 29 games unbeaten to start next season and went on to win the league that year.
Right.
Sunderland were still in the second division. You know, that happens in football. You know, you're only as good as your last season. But it showed the character of the Leeds players. We got almighty stick, because we weren't very popular anyway. But we stuck together, started the season, 29 games unbeaten, went on to win it.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's again, you look through your career again, and you look at this brilliant Leeds team, and you've got a brilliant manager, and you're together a long time, and you do win a lot. But everything I hear about this team suggests you should have won more. And was there something missing, or was it just a bit of bad luck? Or
no, I tell you what. Well, first of all, you had a group of 16 players that played in nearly every match. And if you're knocking on the door all the time, you're going to have more, you hear Mourinho moaning about it now. You have more matches than anybody else. But what the runners-up tag started. We won the league. When I went to Leeds first, we won the league in the second division, 60, we were promoted. And we actually got to the Cup final next season. We beat Manchester United in the semi-final. We ran Manchester United the last match of the season to get 60 points or more, the first time it ever happened. So we were sort of runners-up at a time where if we'd finished middle of the table, it would have been a good season. This was unbelievable stuff for the Leeds players to be runners-up in the league and the first season being promoted. And went on like that, right, as a young, very young team. I was only 22. Norman Hunter, Billy Bremer, and these lads were only 19. Right, so we didn't actually mature as a team until 1968, and from 68 to 74, right, we won the league twice, we won the first cup twice, we won the FA Cup, we won the League Cup.
We won
more trophies between 68 and 74 than any other team, because the likes of Everton won it in 1970, didn't win anything after that. Derby won it in 72, didn't win anything after that.
You're also up against clubs who are actually having their greatest period. Arsenal won the double in 71,
Man
United won the European Cup.
And I think they won the first cup or something in 70. But that was three trophies. Gone. Like, we were there for 10 years.
Yeah.
So you get the reputation. Because if you play in the Cup final, Jer, you're going to finish runners up. So in many ways, for our reputation, we'd have been better off beating in the third round. Or not finishing. We were played 10 years, never out of the top four, right? And in those days, you had to win the league to win into the Champions League, what's now the Champions League.
Yeah.
Right? We won it twice. We got the semi-final and we got the final in the 2 years we were in it.
So I guess your point, I know you're a big golf fan, obviously, Jack Nicklaus with his 18 majors, he finished second in 19 majors. Yeah. If you're going to be close,
you're there. Like, you're Jack, like if Jack second. Had finished down the field in those other matches, wouldn't be regarded as runners-up.
Yeah.
But you have to win an awful lot of matches to become runners-up in the Cup.
Yeah.
And then what was great about the Leeds is year in, year out, year in, year out. And you look at any team and any manager, what you're looking for is consistency, because this is your performance. Well, you couldn't have got a more consistent team in that way.
So do you feel you won enough? Or do you still
have... never win enough.
No, but you know what I mean.
Well, you didn't. You don't do it too badly. I mean, in my case, I was very lucky. I won a medal with Manchester United. So I won two FA Cups, two Leagues, two Fairs Cups, League Cup, Second Division Championship. So...
it's not bad.
I don't appear to be bragging, but I'm sort of bragging.
Go for it.
That was a fact.
I'm suddenly conscious my questioning makes it seem like I'm just dismissing it in some way. I'm not at all. I'm just...
No. It's a general thing with Leeds. Oh, you should have won more than you did. It's just true.
Right.
We should have won more than we did.
Okay.
But we won more than anybody else at that particular time.
The thing is, if you'd beaten Sunderland, that probably wouldn't happen.
And what I must say in those days as well, you didn't have the top four, right?
Yeah.
In those days, for example, I think it was from 1966... to 73, six different teams won the league.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
Right? So I think it was Liverpool won it, I think, in 66 or 67. Manchester City won it in 68. Leeds won it in 69. Everton won it in 70. Arsenal won it in 71. 72, Derby won it. 73, Liverpool. So it wasn't like it is today. There was a top eight
it
or
changed.
Nine teams. So there's more competition, actually, to win trophies at that particular time.
Last question. Who's going to win the Cup final this weekend? It seems pretty straightforward. Arsenal have no defence.
Well, it has to be Chelsea. Sorry, Chair, what was that?
Arsenal have no defence.
Well, Chelsea have to be favourites. But it wouldn't be the first time that... I go back to Sunderland in 1973. We were bigger favourites than Chelsea are to win it. And you got Wimbledon beating Liverpool and all the various things. Like they always say, you never know what's going to happen in the Cup. But obviously, if I was putting money on it, you'd have to go with Chelsea.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, John Giles. Thanks, John. Well
done. Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.